From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we're bringing you some of the best from our celebrity guest segment, Not My Job. Now, these days, we take it for granted that musicians will be stunningly attractive. It's as if they're handing out record contracts just by picking out random pages in the Victoria's Secret catalog. But for men of a certain generation, namely mine, the first singer who made us want to look at her albums as much as listen to them was Linda Ronstadt. But the big difference between her and the pretty young things that now follow her, though, is that Ms. Ronstadt can really sing. And as we found out, she could talk, too, as she showed when she appeared on a show with Adam Felber, Paula Poundstone, and Sue Ellicott that we recorded in Berkeley, California, and broadcast in April of this year. So how are you?
I'm fine.
You're good? You're good? What you doing these days?
Well, I have two teenage children. Oh, God, it's like a curse.
Really? So you're spending your
time... Well, they're nice.
Are they really? What are their names?
Well, I usually don't say their names.
Oh, really?
But it's Mary and Carlos, I guess.
Okay. It's all right. Nobody listens to us. It's okay. why don't you say their names?
I don't know. It's their privacy. I always feel like to talk about other people, I sort of need their permission.
Wow. I'm the same way. I haven't even seen my kids in 10 years.
Yeah. I know, you're lucky.
Just respecting their privacy.
Wait a minute. You won't talk about other people without their permission?
Well, it depends on the person and what my relationship is to them.
Could somebody put in a call to Jerry Brown? Quick. No, we won't do that. I do want to ask you, though, I mean, one of the amazing things about you was back in the 70s, you're starting out your career, you were on top of everything. I remember seeing that Time magazine that you were on the cover of. I think it was 1977. You're lying there looking sultry.
I wasn't lying there. I was sitting there.
You're sitting there.
Looking kind of stupid. I didn't like the photographer didn't like me very much, and I wasn't quite sure I liked him either, and it was quite a difficult afternoon, as I recall.
The photographer didn't like you?
Yeah, well, I don't think he did. I mean, I think he just didn't think I was very...
photogenic.
Very worthy of having my picture taken, particularly.
Really?
Well, I think he was listed taking pictures of people like Marilyn Monroe or something. I don't know. Anyway, he seemed a little kind of... you know.
Wow. But that's so sad. You're getting photographed for the cover of Time magazine, and you're sitting there going, I'm not enjoying this. He doesn't like me. I don't like me.
Well, I had painter pants I wanted to wear, which is what I usually wore. I mean, he wanted me to wear an evening gown, which I never wear. So that was kind of the beginning of the conflict.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I remember it said, it was like the age or the era of torchy rock.
I know.
What the heck is that?
No idea whatsoever.
But there you are.
Well, apparently it wasn't sung with painter pants.
No.
I had Cub Scout pants.
Well, one torchy?
Torchy. Torchy.
Character from Greece, I think.
I think so. Yeah. One of the great things about your career is you had all these tremendous hits, God knows how many top singles in the 70s, and then in the early 80s you made a complete turn and you did something entirely different. You put out those records with Nelson Riddle.
Well, before that I went to Broadway.
Yeah, you went to Broadway. Yeah. You were in the Pirates of Penzance in 1980.
Right.
So you're doing Gilbert
and
Sullivan.
That was my big turn.
Yeah. Now, what happened? Were you sort of, were you dissatisfied with being an international rock star?
I didn't like playing in arenas because they didn't seem to me to be very appropriate places for music. People go out and buy beers and mill around and light a joint and, you know, get a hot dog. And it just didn't seem like it was a place that was set up for an evening of a magical reality, which is what we like to think we give to the audience here on the stage. We hope that we will.
Couldn't you have said, I just want to play smaller theaters and I'll charge $1,000 a ticket? And...
No, nobody... Listen, in those days you could get a $10 ticket, which is the way it should be, I think.
No. Don't tell them that.
Yeah. That was before... But, I mean, there are a lot of things that drove the prices. There was Ticketmaster, you know, it takes a huge percentage. And then, you know, and then everybody had to have more smoke and more lights. And because you can't play music in those big places, so you have to do something. It has to be a big, bold gesture. You know, because there's so much reverb in there. You know, things are echoing around and echoing around. You get there, and you're still, the guitar solo from the band that was playing the week before is still ringing around. So no one can hear you.
I read once that in regard, and those Nelson Riddle records were big in my life, but I read once that you really didn't like, you didn't really feel at home with the music you were playing until you discovered Nelson Riddle.
Well, I didn't discover Nelson Riddle late. I discovered... You know,
oh,
I was there for the first time around, you know, because I was born in 1946. So, I felt that I was artificially encouraged to kind of cop a really tough attitude, you know, because rock and roll is kind of tough. And it was quite an identity crisis that women had. Wow. You know, there was Janis Joplin, she was really funky, and she wore a see-through blouse, and she was actually quite literate and quite shy and lovely person, but, you know, she had to be really red-hot mama and, you know, drinking, what did she drink? She drank some Southern Comfort and being drunk and kind of slobbering or whatever it was that you were supposed to be doing. I don't drink, so it was kind of hard for me to get the right amount of slobber going.
Yeah. And,
I was kind of a shy child growing up and a bit timid. Mm-hmm. And so I had to sort of invent this big kind of tough bravura thing, and I didn't feel like I wore it quite authentically.
Did you ever miss, once you had sort of made this change into the 80s, into smaller venues and different kinds of things, different kinds of music, did you ever miss the
whole...
Oh, no,
I'd like to play for the smallest audience possible. It's just hard to get paid, you know. I mean, even with a $10 ticket, that Paul Simon line, Angels in the Architecture, you know, I really wanted that. I wanted a theater that was like the way the Greeks designed theater, so that you focus your attention on the stage. I mean, it's a small thing to expect, but... You know, when you're actually standing on the stage, you kind of hope people put their attention up there instead of off looking at the beer sign or the whatever. You know, it just, you know, people got greedy. And I think also for entertainers, after we got into those big coliseums, we didn't go and see each other's music anymore. We didn't go. In the old days when I used to play at the Troubadour, which is a little folk club that held 300 people in Hollywood, you know, we all went and saw each other. I saw every single night and every show of Jackson Browne and James Taylor and Joni Mitchell and Elton John and, you know, Carole King, whoever was through there singing. So Wow. We could be influenced by each other. But after we got in the Coliseums, well, nobody wanted to, you know, first you can't park and you... it's hard to go to those places. And it sounds awful. You know, the last time I went to see... I think it was Prince. I went and saw the Purple Rain tour because I'm such a slobbering... I can slobber for Prince.
Oh, sure. Who doesn't?
I slobber for him. He's really good.
You know, you could still... If it's just that you're waiting for the Greek theater thing of people to focus on the stage, my son is in the third grade, and I can tell you that one thing his teacher does is say, I'm waiting. And just
I'll remember that.
Don't begin.
Yeah.
And maybe if somebody's talking on the side, have everybody focus on them for a minute.
Have you tried this yet?
Yes, I certainly have.
So are you, I just want to check, I mean, I know you're recording, you just had a record last year, but are you still performing, or do you still sing in clubs or theaters of your liking?
I sing, you know, I still do concerts, I sing with the orchestra, because I have all these great Nelson Riddle charts, I have a stack of them, it's really fabulous, and that was my gift to myself. You know, in 1980, I decided I wanted grown-up music, and I didn't want to be on stage singing, you know, It's So Easy, which was a perfectly reasonable song when you're young and kind of out to get it, you know. But when you get to be 60, you're kind of not out to get it. You kind of stay home at night, and I wanted a song for that.
Right.
So I thought I'll just mail myself this present into the future, which I called up Nelson Riddle and said, will you do some of these arrangements for me? I didn't know if he'd ever heard of me, and as it turned out, he hadn't. But he did the arrangements anyway.
Because 1983 it was, or in the early
80s? Didn't have a clue who I was.
Really?
Yeah, and probably wouldn't liked it anyway. He hated rock and roll, you know.
Clearly so, not a subscriber to Time or Newsweek.
Well, he asked his daughter. He asked his daughter, and his daughter said, you know, it's okay that, you know, her checks won't bounce.
Yeah.
You can write for her. So, and we had a fabulous time. I had so much fun with him. And got to, you know, and the little secret is that why we all want to, you know, all of us kind of rocker geezer types are coming around to standards eventually, although I did it as a younger woman. But they just are, those songs are beautifully written, and they beg to be interpreted and reinterpreted and reinterpreted, and each person gets to make them his or her own, because they're enormously flexible, and they're enormously sturdy in their musical construction. You know, they're just... really little jewels of artistic expressions.
You were, in fact, one of the first... Yes, this is true. You were, in fact, one of the first... I think you were the first sort of modern pop singer to sort of turn into an album of standards, which, as you say, has become almost de rigueur for pop singers, people like Rod Stewart, as they get to be a certain age. Do you feel at all guilty about that? That we're not afflicted by Rod Stewart trying to be Dean Martin?
I just feel like I had, in my little way, I may have rescued some of those songs from spending the rest of their lives riding up and down in an elevator.
Bravo! Well, Linda Ronstadt, we are so delighted to have you here. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
They said we were mad at the Academy. Mad, I tell you.
That is what we call our occasional foray into the world of odd inventions. We're going to ask you three questions about some rather strange but real patents taken out in recent years. Get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Linda Ronstadt playing for?
Linda is playing for Rochelle Caruso of Sacramento, California.
Ready to go?
I'm playing for what?
You're playing?
For Rochelle Caruso.
What do you mean I'm playing for her?
Oh. Now, the way it works is if you get two out of three correct, Carl will record a home answering machine message or voicemail, whichever, for that person who wrote in.
I thought he'd record it for me. That's what you said backstage. I want you on my answering machine.
Maybe that's between...
People are really tired of hearing me talk. I'll trade you. I'll sing yours, and you can talk mine.
Oh, go for it.
There's a deal.
I'll call you back someday. But I won't know any answers.
All right.
Because I don't watch television. I never know anything.
Okay. First, an invention from 1965 to help with the pain and difficulty of childbirth. Is it A, a specialized turntable that helps spin the baby out by centrifugal force? B, a fake, cushy rubber uterus that you can place the newborn in so it has some familiar surroundings for its first day or so of life? Or C, a soundproof birthing helmet for the mother so her screams won't disturb the baby?
It was the middle thing.
The middle thing,
like
the rubber uterus.
Rock-a-bye baby, it rocks.
You sort of, the little uterus. You put the baby...
womb sounds
sort of,
and...
Yeah, you stuff it back in, because you buy into the whole theory that the baby is shocked by emerging and therefore...
It's pretty shocking.
I've never gotten over it. And that's your choice, the fake uterus.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid it was actually the centrifugal turntable.
How does that work?
It's called the... I'm going to leave this to your imagination. It's called the apparatus... for facilitating the birth of a child by centrifugal force. Patented by the...
My children are adopted, so I wouldn't know about this.
Really?
Never having had a baby.
Well, let me tell you, having attended a childbirth or two, we could have used a fast-spinning turntable.
What if it's
and a
breech?
Series of targets around the room with different point values. It would have been really great.
Did they sort of start it at 33, and if it wasn't good enough, whack it up to 78?
Exactly.
Suddenly the mother's scream sounds so much higher pitched.
Yeah. You have two more chances to get something right. Let's see how it goes, Linda. Here we go. Next question. There are a lot of patents for useful software, as you can imagine, including which of these? All right. One of these things really exists. A software program that automatically pixelates the dirty bits of pornographic pictures so religious people can safely look at them. B, a program that automatically senses when your cat is walking on your keyboard and turns off the computer. Or C, a program for shy people that automatically generates provocative messages for chat rooms.
Jeez. God, I don't know anything about computers. The cat thing.
You're going to go for the cat thing?
Yeah.
You're right!
Okay.
Now, Peter, is the program called Pause?
No, very good. It's called Paw Sense.
Yeah.
Pause.
I don't recommend it.
Pause.
Really?
Because my cat was unable to send email for a month and was very angry.
Here we go. Last question. These are tough times. Here's a recent invention devoted to making you feel more secure. Is it A driver-actuated flamethrower for your car to deter carjackers? B, an electrified bra to foil sexual assaults, or just two forward suitors?
I have that. I have to recuse myself.
Okay. Or C, a new kind of house siding in camouflage patterns so as to make your home less visible to would-be burglars.
It has to be the electric bra.
It has to be the electric bra? Yeah. A little battery pack on the hip?
Or
maybe... I don't know. I don't know. I hardly wear one.
No, it clips.
What have we learned about you? What have we learned about you tonight?
Okay. Mostly, unless I have to go be out in a professional thing. Like I'm from the 60s. Drug, sex, and rock and roll. No bras. It's the thing.
You just said you didn't drink.
I don't drink. I don't not drink because of a moral thing. I don't drink because I'm allergic. If I could drink and it made me feel good, I probably would. I probably would drink a lot. I probably would have had a couple of stiff ones before I came out here.
I'd love to
drink.
If we could, we'd be drinking now. But no, your choice is the electrified bra.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it was the flamethrower.
Oh, heck. But that can't be legal. You couldn't.
Well, it's legal in South Africa.
Well, it's dangerous.
Where it's invented. It's called the blaster. It was invented in South Africa. Carjackings remain a problem there. But you can get it, maybe. Carl, how did Linda Ronstadt do in our quiz?
Well, she needed at least two correct answers to win our prize for Rochelle Caruso, but Linda had just one correct answer. Oh.
But will she still be singing for Carl?
Hey, what happens in Berkeley?
Yeah, man.
What was I saying?
So, you've talked so much about the pleasure you take in singing for small audiences. Are you going to be out there singing again on tour at all?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I sing with the Mexican band, and sometimes I sing with the orchestra, and sometimes I sing with my friend Anne Savoy, who's a traditional singer from Louisiana. We made a record together.
Yeah.
She and I did. I Do False Heart. Am I allowed to plug it?
Go, yes, plug.
I Do False Heart. We made it.
Linda, I have to tell you something really important.
What's that?
I remember riding in the back of a truck, listening to Desperado. And it's such a fond memory, and it's such a great song. And I have the Nelson Riddle album with you, and I love it so much. It's a great thing that you made both of them.
Thank you.
See, that's the key to the whole thing.
Thank you. That's nice. Well, Don Henley sang Desperado better than I did, because he wrote it. So just in case.
I enjoyed your version very much, and that's the one we used on our truck.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
With the flamethrower.
With the
and the electric bra.
Yes, very much so.
That was a good truck. I remember that.
Linda Ronstadt is one of the greatest singers in American pop music. Her latest album with Anne Savoy, is A Do False Heart. Linda Ronstadt, what a pleasure to have you with us. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
So much.
Till the death of loving needles can I bend.
We want to thank Ted Koppel, Justice Stephen Breyer, and Linda Ronstadt for being reckless enough to appear in our program, plus, of course, Carl Castle and all our panelists, as well as our audiences in Berkeley and at our home at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago.